If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got some exciting news for you. I'm hosting a very special live event for recruitment business owners this September in Dallas, Texas, and I'd love you to join us. The Recruitment Coach Live Summit takes place on September 9th and 10th at the Jewel in downtown Dallas. And this one is extra special because it's our 25th anniversary event. I started Recruitment Coach back in September 2001, so we're marking that milestone in a big way. You'll meet some of the guests you've heard on this show. You'll meet them in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed will be attending or actually speaking at the summit. The quality of people in this room is going to be phenomenal, and we're going to have a blast. Registration is now open, and the early bird pricing won't be around for long. So grab your spot now to learn more and register. Visit recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
And on the back of the Joe book, it says, what if the worst thing that ever happened to you was the best thing that ever happened to you? Having a better understanding of who I am, why we do what we do, because for me, I was always driven by the stick, not the carrot. Just like trying to prove myself, trying to be worthy. Entrepreneurially, I think just anybody that's listening, just really understanding like, what matters to you? What's most important? Not sacrificing work for family. Most of us are doing the work for a family. Having your why, but then also don't let yourself, all the pressure around being an entrepreneur, don't let that affect your home.
After 6 years of hard work and sacrifice, Darwin Schurig built a $2.5 million recruiting firm. That included $1.2 million in personal production. On the surface, it looked like a hugely successful business. However, there were cracks in the foundations that Darwin didn't notice until it was too late. Then, the medical device industry that he served went into a downturn. In the first quarter of 2023, 8 out of Darwin's top 9 clients stopped using external recruiters. His pipeline dried up. His revenue went to almost zero. His team disintegrated.
8 of the 9 clients that we had filled multiple roles with the previous year all stopped using an external recruiter. So we had a huge chunk of business that just stopped. Just a whole bunch of things that happened at the same time. And a lot of it really didn't make a whole lot of sense. And we just stopped making money.
Since then, Darwin has been on the long, slow road to rebuilding his life and his business. Today, he's ready to share his journey and reveal what he learned from the setbacks and challenges he's experienced and what he's doing differently this time around.
If we don't put our oxygen mask on first, whether that's professionally, personally, at home, then you're not going to be as good for other people. And so one of the biggest things I learned was just that building processes around myself first versus making things easier for other people. I definitely tried to please too many different people.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm thrilled to have Darwin back on the show for his second appearance. He's a Pinnacle Society member, and he's a member of our community of recruitment business owners. In this episode, Darwin breaks down how he is completely reshaping the way he works, his business model, how he is working with clients and candidates, leveraging technology to create a better experience on both sides, and increase the success rate of every search. If you've ever wondered whether there's a smarter way to run your practice, or you wanted to differentiate yourself and deliver a level of service that genuinely sets you apart, this is a conversation worth listening to. Hey, Darwin, great to see you again.
You as well, Mark. Always good to see you.
I think last time I saw you was in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Pinnacle Conference there.
Atlanta. And the next time I'll see you in person will be here in Miami in a couple of weeks.
I'm not going to make it to Miami, unfortunately, but I'm hoping we can reconnect in person sometime soon. So look, this is your second time on the podcast. Last episode, are you ready for this, was December 2022. So it was a while ago.
I just told Sanjay, he didn't realize I'd been on, and I said it was in 2022. And right before so many things in my life and in the world a lot of changes have happened since I was last on. So,
and so that's exactly why I thought you were due for a second appearance. So last time we talked about how you'd build 1.2 million personally that year and over 2 million. I think it was 2.2 million as a team. 2.5 million. Okay, wow. That was a great year. Since then, I know there's been a lot of change. You've had some setbacks and you've completely reimagined your business and you're doing some extremely innovative things. So really just wanted to catch up. Well, take me back to, you know, beginning of 2023, you've just come off a fantastic year. What's transpired since then in the life of Darwin Shurig?
A lot of things happened, a lot of changes. There were a lot of things that were happening in the office and in the home that just really didn't make a whole lot of sense, to be quite frank. We had in January, February, the first quarter of 2023, 8 of the 9 clients that we had filled multiple roles with the previous year all stopped using an external recruiter. So we had a huge chunk of business that just stopped. And at the same time, there were some things going on with some employee scenarios where a chunk of business left because of a challenge there that was not expected, where there was a business being set up in behind the scenes. So that caused there's just a whole bunch of things that happened at the same time, and a lot of it really didn't make a whole lot of sense. But we had always for 6 years, the business had grown pretty steadily, and very rarely ever the previous 4 years went a month without revenue or billings coming in. And we just stopped making money, essentially. So it was a very difficult time. And then found out in the second quarter, at the time, 17 years of marriage, that my wife at the time didn't want to be married anymore. So then that led into a difficult time in a personal life. And so just a ton of changes. And in terms of personally, monetarily, and then that process took a while to unwind. So, and anybody that's dealt with that, obviously, it's not a fun situation, especially with lawyers and such. They don't tend to calm things down. So a lot of changes at the time. I had been trying to, so up to that point, our offer acceptance rate had averaged 94%. 53% of candidates that had accepted an offer historically had been promoted within 24 months. And when you tend to work with startups or mid-caps that are growing, that makes sense. You bring somebody that has skill, they fit the culture, they have the skills, so they're doing a great job and then they're rewarded. That makes sense. And then third hire retention rate than the industry average. So my goal had always been to change the candidate experience. I've just always thought the candidate experience was not that great. And then maybe the hiring manager, there's just a lot of wasted resources. I think a lot of people go on interviews or candidates are interviewed that maybe shouldn't be because they don't have the skill. They're not going to fit the culture, or they were never going to go to that company based on the other companies that they were looking at and interviewing with, that just most companies don't have maybe a great process to figure that out without investing the time and the resources. So at that time, that previous year, it started using video technology to do interviews with hiring managers and creating a really a better candidate experience around branding and information, and then bringing that same experience back to the hiring managers. So the goal was to kind of build that out. And then that all just stopped because of what was going on in life. And then in November of 24, that started back up. So we've been building that SaaS out, software as a service and then the first version came out in December, and we've been testing it and then pilot it with two clients with some really unique success. Really cool success examples with one of the clients down in Florida. And so then we've rebuilt the second version, and the goal is to, we're using it for our partners, and the goal is to bring it to the market for recruiting firms and companies to use it for their internal process as well.
Wow, that's like a fantastic high-level overview of everything that you've gone through and created over the last couple of years, Darwin, I guess. Let's just go through that step by step and see what we can learn and what our audience can learn from it as well. Because that drop off in business in 2023 that you described, that was not just you. I know a lot of firms went through that, and it's I think you're in biotech, right? Medtech or
medical device, and we do some biotech devices. And pharma, a lot of combination product experience.
Okay. And so I've heard that industry, I mean, a lot of industries overhired during kind of COVID, and they got carried away. And then there was a huge drop off in hiring activity in 2023. And I think your space was particularly affected by that. But that's scary as hell, right? Like, what was going through your head when you're used to, you know, having an extremely successful practice, and then suddenly it dries up?
It's pretty frightening, to be quite frank. And I think that, you know, they say when you get into recruiting, I was told that it takes 2 years to really figure it out. And I remember being told that when I joined the MRI franchise, and in my mind, I thought, it's not going to take 2 years. I think it definitely took 2 years. I didn't make any money for the first 6 months. And I was told 5 years till you really become expert level. And 2021 and 22, 2 years in a row, I billed over $1 million myself. And I'm not saying it's the smartest way to do things in terms of, I think there's better ways, process wise and structure. However, in those positions that I filled, I did the recruitment. You know, I got the jobs, the business development, I did the recruitment, really did everything other than schedule the candidate interviews. So not necessarily the best or most efficient, but obviously had success and would consider myself, if you look at statistically, the amount of companies that actually bill over $1 million in revenue at all, company-wise, that I know what I'm doing and am good at what I'm doing. And then to have everything just kind of implode was incredibly humbling. And I'm in the process of writing a second book, but I never imagined being an author, and that led to writing The Modern Day Job. So it's just a very humbling experience, and just kind of looking at your own fragility in terms of how quickly things can change. Obviously, the world's dealing with in terms of the pandemic and a lot of things happening in the world right now is probably for many very eye-opening in a variety of ways. So just kind of looking in the mirror and figuring out, okay, how did this happen? How do I think we learn more from our failures than we do our successes. And yes, so sir. I certainly learned a lot, have been humbled extremely, and learned a lot through the process of how to do things differently, I think, in terms of hiring. And that led to a lot of aspects of, I think, helping, you know, this creating this experience. AI, I think the last year and a half, it's just like having a lot of conversations with executives. I just had two yesterday. AI is creating a lot of efficiency. It's replacing jobs. We're seeing a lot of positives. It's also a lot of potential challenges. And the world is changing at a very rapid pace. I was just at LSI Emerging MedTech, and one of the panels around AI, they're talking about it. One of the leaders made the statement, whatever investment you make, you'd better get ROI out of it within the next year because it's obsolete by the end of the year. That's a profound statement. And so to be trying to build out a SaaS, I'm not a software and IT person, that's a little bit frightening. And at the same time, candidates, I'm seeing a lot of scenarios where candidates are getting screened out that are good candidates. They have the experience, they'd be a good fit potentially. They don't even get up to bat, they get auto rejected. Companies have processes. I guess the way I describe it is they have a process of bringing talent into the company, placing ads. I don't see a lot of scenarios where the company has internal recruiters that are trained or maybe have the skill set that they do in our world outside, right? You're actively reaching out every day. You're building relationships and you're building a pipeline and in the areas that one recruits in. And so a lot of these companies have a process where they're placing ads and they're bringing in resumes and they're paying people that are really more HR. They're more gatherer than hunter, and they're getting paid to curate a process that provides very little yield. A lot of resources are being used. And so candidates being screened out by an AI process because they didn't fit the algorithm or the keywords. And then talking to executives, I mean, VP level. I just had some really unique conversations in the last 3 weeks where the hiring manager or the VP creates this director role, creates a job description with somebody particularly in mind that had worked with them before. That person applies and they don't even get an interview.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
And the vice president, who I've known for 9 years, says, hey, you got to go through the normal process. But this person had worked for them previously and he went to them and said, hey, you know, what's going on? I have this role coming. He said, you know what? The timing's good. She said, yeah, I'd love to work with you again. Had been in this type of role previously. Says, okay, you got to go through the process, but I'm going to literally create this job description with you in mind. And then just says, you know, apply, put me down as a reference, the vice president. And then 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, she comes back and tells him, hey, thanks for your interest, but we're moving forward with candidates and more specifically fit.
That's the craziest, you know, example of the system being broken that I've ever heard. I think that's.
And he goes to them and says, hey, what happened here? And that team says, well, they didn't fit. They're not a good fit. And he's like, are you kidding me? I had a VP that I've been friends with. I placed 8 people on his team 4 years ago. All of them are still there. So matches our, you know, our outcomes and analytics. But then they brought HR or recruitment internal. And so he's like, we have 800 applications for one role. It's like, how do we thin that down? And people are using AI to customize their resume. And so it's just, there's a lot of challenges around it, I think, with talent and recruitment. And can I share one more example on this?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm out at LSI, I meet this remarkable lady that's been at the FDA for 12 years.
Wait, sorry, LSI, I'm not familiar with that.
Sorry, LSI Emerging MedTech. So it's a conference that I've been involved in. It's a ecosystem of startups in MedTech and investors that get together. I've been involved in that ecosystem for 7 years. So I'm out at that conference and I meet this remarkable lady who's been at the FDA for 12 years in a senior director level position, just really unique background, you know, position. And she's leaving the FDA. I meet with her and we're having this conversation about this topic. And she says, you're not going to believe this, but she's leaving and whoever's involved with the internal recruitment for that role creates a job description and an opportunity on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn's AI algorithm will reach out to people and tell them a good fit for things. Which ironically, a month ago, I got a message from LinkedIn for a VP of clinical and regulatory and medical device company that I'd be a good fit. Now, yes, I have a clinical background.
You used to do that, right? So it's
not
for
medical company, not anything, you know, I was always on the commercial side.
Okay,
in corporate
America.
So I do have a clinical background in terms of in the hospitals and then was in a role to help a ventilator come to the US, but would not be a good fit, for example. So she tells me that the algorithm messages sends her a message relevant to the job she's in and tells her she's below moderate potential candidate. And she's like, what? I've been in the role 12 years. So,
listen, having a ChatGPT license for your team is great, but it is not enough. ChatGPT requires you to stop what you're doing, switch windows, copy information, and ask it to do something. AI agents are different. They're built into your workflow and they take action automatically. Recruiter Flow is an AI-first ATS and CRM with built-in AI agents working for you around the clock. Their encoding agent structures your data. Their job change alert agent monitors your database for opportunities. Their note-taking agent captures conversations and updates your CRM. This isn't about working harder. It's about letting AI handle the busy work so you can focus on relationships. To see it in action, go to recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. If you've noticed your LinkedIn impressions declining in 2025 or 26, here's why. Changes to the algorithm mean text-only posts are underperforming across the board and continuing to lose reach and engagement. Video, on the other hand, is now the highest performing format on LinkedIn for engagement and the only format that's grown in both reach and interactions year over year. Trusted Voice Video helps you align with that shift without adding more work to your week. In just 30 minutes, we capture enough video content to keep you visible for the next 30 days. We plan the topics, guide the conversation, and handle all the editing and delivery. You won't ever be stuck for ideas. You won't worry about how you look or sound. We coach you through the session so you come across as clear, confident, and credible on camera. By the way, this is the same setup I use for my own LinkedIn videos. It's all handled by my colleague Sanjay, who also produces the podcast you're listening to right now. If you want content that's aligned with how LinkedIn actually works today, book a free video content strategy call at recruitmentcoach.com/video. That's crazy. There's a number of strands coming together here, which I think are pointing to the creation of this platform that you're building, right? To try and address some of these issues that are impeding companies from finding the best talent, but also making a shit experience for everyone who is like on a candidate who's applying for that process. Before we dive, I want to do a deep dive on that, Darwin, because it's really interesting what you're doing. And from how you've described it to me on a previous conversation, it sounds phenomenal. Before we get to that, I'd love to hear the kind of process of going from like revenue falls off a cliff to building back up to create, building some kind of, you know, business again, like what you tried, what didn't work, what did work, you know, what were the lessons looking back at that whole experience from where you're sitting now? What were the things that, what did you learn from that unique set of challenges?
There are multiple lessons for me personally that I definitely learned. I think number one, I love the book, Good to Great. I think that's just a fabulous book. And in there, it gives the example of the hedgehog versus the fox, and the fox is chasing all these different projects. And I was definitely too many projects, and I was hiring people, putting much too much risk on the company and on myself, because I was generating such a large amount of revenue and I was making my life harder and more difficult, which increases the stress and increases the pressure. And so I think that just not appreciating certain things, being able to breathe, smell the roses, thinking, you know, scale, and which, you know, going from, you know, 500,000 to 1,000,000 to 2.5 is awesome. Attempting to fall forward. And at the same time, it's like, why are you doing what you're doing? Why do you want to build that way? But really realizing now, I look at everything now in terms of what, if we don't put our oxygen mask on first, whether that's professionally, personally, at home, then you're not going to be as good for other people. And so one of the biggest things I learned was just that building processes around myself first versus making things easier for other people in terms as a business owner, because I definitely tried to please too many different people. And even in terms of hiring, I think just being more specific around hiring and mitigating risk around that.
Can you say more about the subject, Darwin? Because it feels like you're summarizing a whole bunch of experiences and learnings and insights, and you're giving me the bottom line, which I like. It's a soundbite, but I'd love to unpack that because there's lots of other, because look, if you do have an ambition that you want to build something that beyond just yourself, right, then it's a legitimate path to build a team, but it's also a very challenging one. And so you mentioned like you were focused more on making life easier for others rather than thinking commercially about the business and things like that nature. Could you elaborate on like maybe some of the mistakes you made as you were scaling, and then if you were going to hire again, what you would do differently?
Absolutely. And I think for anybody that's listening to this from an entrepreneurial standpoint, entrepreneurship's very difficult. And anybody that's been in commercial sales of any kind, or most any type of sales type position, business development, marketing, has most likely taken a lot of personality profiling tests. Miller-Hyman, DISC, there's all these different ones. I've taken a lot of them several times in my time, 12 years in corporate America. And being in that entrepreneurial mindset, usually that puts you in a very interesting class in terms of how you think and how you deal with adversity and pain and things of that nature. I was at the San Diego Pinnacle Society conference in March, April of 2023, not long after I was on your podcast. And that's when things were all starting to really fall apart in multiple ways. And there was a presentation that Jeremy did there around
Jeremy Sizemore. Shout out to Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy's amazing.
It was the one where he did a handstand?
Yes.
In the middle of the presentation.
He might have.
Because I was at San Diego.
He put his leg down. Actually, he brought me up to the front. I was one of the people who came up front to see if you could stand on one leg, put your other leg out, and not fall over. It was really talking about balance and mental health. And
I was there. I saw that one. Yeah.
Okay. We were sitting at a table, and everybody at the table that I was at, and there was like five or six of us. And one of the people who's amazing was like, he's describing like, are we all like a little schizophrenic? Like it was talking about mental health and how so many people like in Pinnacle Side are very success oriented, driven. And that can affect other areas of your life. And so I think for me, the biggest part of this journey, on the back of the Joe book, it says, what if the worst thing that ever happened to you was the best thing that ever happened to you? And so just having a better understanding of who I am, why we do what we do, because for me, I was always driven by the stick, not the carrot, if that makes sense. And just like trying to prove myself, trying to be worthy. And so entrepreneurially, I think just anybody that's listening, just really understanding like, what matters to you, what's most important, not sacrificing work for family. Most of us are doing the work for a family. So you having your why, but then also don't let yourself all the pressure around being an entrepreneur, don't let that affect your home. And, in terms of working too many hours, being distanced, not putting the things that matter first. So for me, I definitely learned a lot more about myself. And I went through a lot of healing and emotional trauma therapy and some different things as I went through everything in my life really being removed at that time. to just kind of figure out things that I needed to heal in myself and work on myself, which I think was very positive. And then also looking at how you hire people. I think it helped me with the SaaS and even my clients to do a better job of that upfront vetting. And I think a lot of companies take functional skill set and cultural fit, and they don't really know how to differentiate them. So they lump them together, and that doesn't, then you tend to, I think, hire people that look more like you, sound more like you, or have been in the same circles or the same companies, versus just because somebody sounds a little bit different, or maybe that's not doesn't feel as comfortable. But if you're able to delineate that and ask cultural questions in a different way, and then evaluate the skill set, then I think companies are going to do a better job of avoiding cost of mishires, have higher employee engagement, because the personal why should really match the mission and vision. Because we all know that, especially in medical device, companies are going to have problems. Warning letters, there's a lot of challenges. I've talked to 5 leaders in the last 6 weeks that have gotten 483s and warning letters, which are very, very expensive. The average warning letter in medical device is $1.2 million per company.
I don't know what that means, Darwin. That's not outside of my knowledge.
It just means, from a risk management standpoint, the way they've developed this device or product to come to market, that there are issues. And now the FDA is giving them, they're in trouble, and it's going to cost them money to fix the situation. So, and if you don't have high employee engagement, then you're going to have more wasted resources. Whether you're making cakes or you're making medical devices or you're building buildings. So I think hiring people that their personal why, like why they do what they do, why they want to do, whether you're trying to build a recruiting firm or you're building a different type of business, where you're providing a product and a service that is more, you know, we are in recruitment, we're helping connect a person to a person, right? A hiring manager, a company to a candidate in a variety of different areas. We're not necessarily, buying supplies to build a specific product, right? It's a very different type of world. But regardless of what you're doing, I just think that the personal why and what people care about, if that doesn't match up, you're setting yourself up for problems. And I definitely learned to look at that a little bit differently. And for me, right now I have a couple of different contracted support tools, but I don't have any, at the time that 2023, at the beginning of 2023, I had 10 employees. And so I don't have any permanent employees right now. And when I do that process again, I will look at it in a much different light in terms of expectations, shorter leash, or I don't know if that's the best word, but it's shorter runway in terms of, if somebody's not, if the understanding of what's expected is clear and concise and you're bringing somebody on, that then if they're not hitting what they're committed to, then, make a change sooner, not later.
This is brilliant, Darwin. Thank you so much for sharing from your own experience. And I've been taking notes while we're talking. What if the worst thing that ever happened to you is actually the best thing that ever happened to you? That is profound. I appreciate you. I needed to hear that today as well. So thank you. Making sure that their personal why matches the business why. That's that makes total sense. And then paying closer attention to setting expectations, actually monitoring. I teach in one of our coaching programs. It's called Apex. It's for entrepreneurs who are scaling a business. And there's a 4-point performance management system, which looks like a compass. I'm going to try and describe something visual. Hopefully people will get the idea. So the north point of the compass is like, what is the goal? And is everyone clear on what the expectation is, right? Not only do they understand it, but do they believe it? Do they buy into it? Right? Are they motivated to achieve that goal? Then at 3 o'clock, you need a way of measuring and monitoring the actual performance compared to the, you know, desired outcome. So that you've got the expected outcome and the actual outcome. We need a way of measuring how they're performing against that outcome, that expectation. Then at 6 o'clock, you've got the feedback loop. So are we having regular conversations with each team member to discuss it, to talk about what's working, what's not working, where there's room for growth and improvement, and so on. And then at 9 o'clock, in this sort of cycle, it's a cycle because it never stops, right? It's continuous improvement. You've got, okay, if there is a shortfall between the desired outcome and the actual, then you're providing whatever coaching, support, you know, leadership, development, training, you know, you can give them to help them to bridge that gap. And then assuming they bridge the gap and they get on track, then we go around again. And that cycle just never stops. But if despite you doing everything you can to help someone, you give them the support, the training, the tools, you know, there's only so much you can do, right? The rest is up to them. And if in spite of you providing all that, they're still short of expectation, then we have to ask ourselves, why are we doing this, right? You know, you can't carry people because, you know, exactly as you pointed out, the business needs oxygen, i.e. profit, to survive. And if you don't have that, then nope, then we're all out of a job, right? So that doesn't really help anyone. So I feel like I've talked too much, but what's your thoughts?
No, I think that's brilliant. And that was something that I really had to come to grips with and evaluate in myself as I went through this process, because I, you know, my last role in McKesson, I think I had 14 direct reports and over $60 million in revenue in the region that I was in. And I managed my own business and what I allowed people to do or not do completely differently and less disciplined than I did when I worked for somebody else and their money. And Philips, before McKesson, we brought a really unique ventilator to the market, and that's a challenging sales cycle, capital equipment, everything around it, doing clinical trials, putting a lot of fun, really unique. And, you know, from first year, 1.3 million to before I left at about 2.5 million in revenue. And again, like processes and how you do things and discipline, and then having your own company and making money and try, you know, just not being as disciplined. It doesn't really make any sense. That was one thing I really had to kind of look at, like, why are you allowing this to happen or that to happen? You just can't do that. Have to, people are, if they show you they're not going to do what they say they're going to do, it's not going to change. And so you have to protect the business. You have to protect yourself and your family first. And so just having that, which again, I think is why it's so important that you're hiring people that have a certain skill set and have shown success in that, whether it be, you know, hiring somebody to do recruitment that doesn't want to make phone calls, right? That's not going to work.
There's a disconnect there. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
For example, or whether they're doing research, do they really like to do that? Do they care about the space that they're in? If, for instance, one of the products, one of the clients that I'm working on right now has a really unique AI SaaS, software as a medical device product. Another position we're working on is the IVD. Well, if somebody doesn't really care about IVD products, they don't like the complexity of it in certain aspects, then probably not a good idea to bring them on, right? Because
Sorry, Darwin, for the acronym IBD, what does that mean?
So in vitro diagnostics. So medical device, but whether it's, you know, SAMD software as a medical device, orthopedics, or whatever it is, if somebody doesn't care about that, they're not interested in it. Look at all the challenges we've had the last 5 years. And so whatever it is, if they don't care about it, doesn't really matter to them, then when things don't go well, they're going to be more likely to mentally check out. They're going to be more likely, especially if you have hybrid remote and you're not front facing as much. And I hired multiple remote people, and it, majority of it did not go well. So,
oh man, this is a whole other conversation, but so I don't, before we talk about remote, I guess what you're getting at is you mentioned make sure their personal why matches the business, right? Because no job is ever easy all the time, right? There's going to be difficult parts. There's going to be challenges. And so where are they drawing, where does that resilience and drive come from that keeps them pushing forward? It has to connect with them at some deeper level. It has to be meaningful to them, right?
Yeah, your shirt says the resilient recruiter. I'm just giving you that really impressive marketing plug.
Right? Exactly.
But resiliency is really important. Like, why do we do what we do? What matters? And so as an owner and entrepreneur, for the most part, unless you have equity shares and you have a piece there, they're not going to be as committed as you are. And so just making sure you're compensating people fairly, but you're measuring, as you just gave a great example of that, that compass that you described, but what is expected first and foremost? That was one of the first really big lessons as a leader. I got my first leadership position in corporate America because I worked hard and I was successful and I brought value, but not because I was a good leader. I was unfortunately not a very good leader. And one of the people that was that got removed from their position, I was sitting in front of them with a VP who was with me when that person was let go. And it was not, they were not performing. They were not, there was a lot about it that was not good. However, that person said, you know, nobody ever told me this. Nobody. And she was absolutely right, because it was easier to not deal with it than to deal with it. And so I think one of the biggest challenges that is, you know, making it clear what the expectations are in a role, that's real leadership, right? Then empowerment around them, tools, resources, training. They either they don't know what they're supposed to do, so expectations are off, misalignment, or they don't have the skill, which is they're in the wrong seat on the bus, which is not good, right? Or they need training. Those are usually the three things that, and so if you can figure those out up front and manage them on the onboarding, then it's going to be better for everyone.
Totally. So how long did it take, Darwin, before things got better?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, It's still a work in progress. I think you and I've had this conversation. I mean, you know, last year in the summer, you know, there's a couple times I wasn't sure whether the company was going to make it through sort of the things going on in personal life. And, but I just keep, you know, God just keeps giving me jobs. I just keep working it's also was very strange building out the SaaS. I'd never sat in that seat before. It's a completely different kind of entrepreneurial seat.
Let's talk about that then, because we're at this sort of back half of this conversation. So at what point did you get this light bulb saying, do you know what? I should build software that solves this big problem I can see with my client's talent acquisition process. And so as well as running an executive search firm, I'm also going to run a software business. How did that come about?
Well, that's a great question. And I definitely, my goal is not to necessarily run a software business.
Okay.
Just to clarify, it's like, I'm not trying to do two different things. I created the idea and the process. I was hiking a little over 3 years ago, and a lot of ideas and things that have come to me are through, I'm scuba diver, I'm hiking, and I'm kind of meditating and praying at the same time. And I just always thought the candidate experience was not very great. They reached out to a recruiter. Maybe they understand really who the hiring manager is, their personality, what are the skill sets they need to have to accomplish what needs to be accomplished in the role. Maybe they don't know any of that. They just have a job description. Do they understand in the med tech world, like where is, I always look at patient outcomes, access to healthcare or whatever that service or product is. And then does it create efficiency in the healthcare system? Is it saving dollars that benefit all of us, right? Versus waste. Obviously, with a lot of things that have gone on in the world, not to get political, it would appear that there's a lot of money that maybe is going places that it wasn't expected that it was to go, right? Waste or fraud. So if a product can come and it can improve a patient outcome, it proves ability to get healthcare, and it saves money that can go elsewhere. So that's kind of how, you know, how I look at things. So does that recruiter understand what the industry looks like and the competition and that product? And then they share a job description, which is vanilla. I always, my joke, recruiters, I hope you all love this. Most job descriptions, HR and legal had a baby. And and it doesn't
Well, first of all, it may not even be accurate, but even if it is very accurate, it's not really a marketing document. It doesn't excite anybody, right?
Yeah, legal wants all these things in there from a protective standpoint. HR wants as much in there to be inclusive. They think they're going to get more people to apply. That's kind of the thought process around it, but doesn't really tell you a whole lot. And I've found 30% of the time they're wrong and have a lot of examples around that. So my goal has just always been to create a better experience. And so I got this idea, what if we did an interview with the hiring manager? You know, tell me about your leadership style and your team. What do you need the person to do in this position? Why is that important to the functional group in the company? And like, why should they come to your company relevant to all these other opportunities? And so I had a chief medical officer that was like, you know, I think that's a great idea and let's do it. And it was really cool. The candidates thought it was amazing. And that sort of started the process to create a better candidate experience around branding instead of just getting a job description. So now the SaaS that we have, go out, identify whether already you know those candidates and what's interesting them, or you go out and it's really not about finding people in this day and age, right? I mean, you can find anybody's information. And will they talk to you? Will they accept your call or your LinkedIn invite or your email or whatever it is? And then once you know what matters to them, then now you we've created a tool, a process that can really attract them. They can come in, they're intrigued. Yeah, I'd be interested. Send me the job description. No, we're going to invite you into the Top Talent Accelerant candidate experience. They get to see this interview with the hiring manager that gives them some insight into who they are. The hiring manager's validated everything I told them about the opportunity and what matters. Articles in the news, other videos, financial stability, what's unique about the product and the industry. So instead of having to go find all this stuff, they get to see it up front. And then we turn around and bring that kind of same experience to the hiring manager with videos, written samples, references. We can do personality profiling. And then the hiring manager in the same system gets to see this really unique, robust picture of who the candidate is, what matters to them. The first question we always ask on the video is, hey, what is your personal why? And what are you looking for, open to in an opportunity? So they're really getting to kind of see a piece of each other. And so again, instead of going into an interview and not really understanding, they know the candidate's attracted based on what they've seen. And they know that they can do the job. Now the conversation's more about, hey, how, based on your previous experience, would we execute on what I need done here? Are we going to like each other? If the company wants to do, I always found it interesting in the commercial world. It's like I got jobs and then 6 months later, a year later, you're at the sales conference and everybody does the profile and looks at how better to work together. They're not doing that up front. And so I've had a couple clients where they've embraced this, but we do the profiling as a part of the interview process. Now they can say, look and say, well, hey, we look a little bit differently around this particular topic. So let's talk about that. How would we deal with that? So that again, less wasted resources, higher chance of both sides fitting well. And then notes are real time in the system. So if somebody just got done with the interview, they put their notes in. I have a debrief an hour later with the candidate. I can see those notes. I already know what the hiring manager thinks. The candidates are always like, filled a role a year and a half ago. And I had a candidate, he's a neat guy named Mark in Cleveland. And I, in about a 72-hour period, met him, found out what he was interested in, shared with him the video and the information for the client. He was like, this is great. Submitted him forward. Within 24 hours, I knew the senior director previously. Senior director's like, this is great. And so in 72 hours was submitted, an interview scheduled, prep scheduled. And he was like, I had an interview 2 weeks ago. I still don't know how it went. I still don't have any feedback. So just the ability to create greater efficiency. And I just think bring more respect to people in this age of AI where I don't know if you've seen some of the feedback or some of the articles on candidates that are taking time off work and dressing up to interview with a bot, and the AI, you know, breaks up or it doesn't finish the interview. And so my hope is that this could be something that for people that companies that really care about that part to invest just a little bit of time up front. It's not a lot of time to do a, you know, record a 5 to 6 minute video, but to put better value in the front end of the funnel, and instead of curating a process and wasting time and resources to try to bring people in, most of the top talent's not going to see that ad. They're not going to apply. It's the iceberg effect, right? They're only going to get the tip of the iceberg that's sitting out, people that have been laid off, people are unhappy. They think, I think I could do that job, but they've never done it, that kind of stuff, H1Bs. Most of the talent's under the water, not actively looking. So my hope is that companies, whether it's recruitment firms to bring better value to their partners, or an internal company that says, you know what, instead of investing all this time and resources to curate this process with little yield, let's hire somebody that knows how to hunt and create a process to do the reverse engineering, do the math, and then go attract the top talent, create a better experience for them, and then we'll avoid the cost of mishires. We'll bring that down and the opportunity cost related to that. And we'll have higher employee engagement. So if we do a better job of hiring people that match up, and then we create employee appreciation programs and career ladders for people to be promoted horizontally, not just laterally, and they already fit the company they're bringing value, and how can we put them in a different spot that they will see, especially as AI continues to cause all of this, in some places, really positive outcomes, but in others, it's creating a real challenge to what is real and what is not real. I saw the one article that said one out of every four candidates are fake. What?
Darwin, I love this. This is really cool. So it's called Top Talent Accelerant.
I renamed the company Top Talent Accelerant because 2 years ago, as we were building out the process, I trademarked it, the actual process. And then when I decided that I was going to completely lose my mind a second time, right? In entrepreneurship, it mandates that you must go completely crazy, right? To become an entrepreneur and try to start a business. I always joke the first time. So when I decided to do this, I just decided, you know, I named Shurig Solutions Incorporated after my family, my surname, and just kind of honor my family. And I just felt like after 10 years and then building out the SaaS, that Top Talent Accelerant was catchier. And so I rebranded the company last summer to Top Talent Accelerant. So the SaaS, that's the name of the SaaS that we'll be bringing to the market as well.
Brilliant. So I think I understood everything that is involved, but at the heart of it is a video, right? With the hiring manager now, is that like an interview or?
Yeah. So it's a, think of a centerpiece, and I guess I could actually show it to the audience or, you know, but it's instead of getting a job description, the candidate gets invited in to the cloud, into the SaaS. They get invited in, they get an email after, you know, this isn't an ad. It's not, you know, the idea is not that it doesn't compete with Indeed or ZipRecruiter, right? Somebody has to know how to recruit, how to hunt. They go identify, and I'll give you a quick example. So I worked on a chief technology officer role for Guided AI, Neat Software is a medical device company up in Boston. And we created the whole experience. And then it was for a chief technology officer position. So there's maybe 450 to 500 relevant chief technology officer. However, they had to even be in the conversation, they had to have experience with software as a medical device, AI, and or they wouldn't be interested in them. So what do we do as recruiters that most people, we don't just open up a drawer and pull out three resumes. We have to do the research, the assessment, our internal database, the external, and do the reverse math. So in reverse math example, in this scenario, I break it down to about 100 maybe relevant candidates, then to 75, and I target the top 20 that actually have the skill set, end up sitting, you know, video conversations with 8 to 10 of them and submit three candidates. But those candidates, I reach out, have conversations with them. What are you open to? And then I'm like, okay, this could be something interesting for you. I give them information about where they're at in terms of their clinical trials, FDA. Yeah, this sounds really good. Send me the job description. No, I'm going to invite you into this candidate experience. So, okay, well, what's that entail? Well, you're going to get to see an interview between myself and the founder physician who's a radiologist that created this idea. About 30% of radiology patients can be misdiagnosed. So that's where this sort of diagnostic came from. And so then they got to see not just the job description, but information about the technology, other videos about the company. And then there's this interview with the CEO and I, hey, tell me about your leadership style, your executive team. What's most important about what you need them to do and why should they look at your company? So the candidates got to see that before deciding whether or not they wanted to move forward to be submitted.
I love, love, love this. And so just so I understand the timing, at what point you're sharing, you're inviting them into the candidate experience is after you've spoken to them or after they've responded to a message and said, yeah, I'm interested in learning more. Like what's the timing of that? And yeah, let me stop there.
Yeah. So it's kind of, think of it in the same way, like traditional recruiting, right? You don't just math email. I mean, I know some people send out, okay, like 100 candidates an email about a new opportunity, a general idea, or you could still do that. I don't, would not just send the LinkedIn invite into the system to just a mass. It's reaching out to the, you know, that they're qualified. Then is the timing right, relevant to what matters to them, where they're at in their career? Does it make sense? And then if it does, I've had a conversation with them. Now, it may be a candidate where I've known them for 5 years and I know that it would probably be a fit. Now, whether the timing is or not, have a conversation with them and they're like, yeah, I'd like to hear more. Well, I already know them. I already know what matters to them. Hey, I'm going to invite you into this experience. If it's somebody I've never met before, I'm going to talk to them first, understand, and then, hey, this could be a good fit, share details. Yeah, give me more information. And then instead of just sending them a resume, you're giving this really unique compilation of information, including that interview with the hiring manager. And so they're getting to see, then they're getting to come in and see the experience. They get a security code, they enter, they get to see, think of it as like a page within the web where at the top, it has all this information about the company. It's branded to the company. So their logo's there. You come down, the centerpiece is that interview with me or whoever the recruiter is and the hiring manager. So they get to see from their words what matters, what they're going to be doing in the position. And then below that job description, they can download the job description, what's exciting about it, what are the key responsibilities and expectations that they need the person to accomplish. And then like, what are the minimum skills and experience that are needed? We can do cultural aspects of that or personality profiling. We could do that there too. And then below that are articles in the news and other videos. So they get to see all this information. We could even do references of the company from different people. So the candidate's being attracted to the role. I think there's more and more, there seems to be more tools and more processes that make it harder for the candidate. The experience for the candidate is getting worse. And it already wasn't that great. And, you know, I having conversations regularly. I knew a director out in Denver for 5 years, and I've been working on a role out there, and I talked to him, and like, he got auto rejected for a job that he's done before. Auto rejected. There's not 60 people in Denver that can do this job. And he's a director level candidate for a director position. And he didn't even get a conversation. That's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. And so there are more tools to make the, it seems, to make the candidate in track. I played basketball and ran track in high school and college. So it's like, okay, the candidate to do more push-ups, more sprints, do more things to show that for the company. However, there's my hope is that this brings something to market that's really unique that actually like makes a better experience for the candidate, that go attract really good talent so they feel more respected, they get more information up front. And I think that that could have a phenomenal impact on companies' profitability, wasted resources, and higher employee engagement, because you're hiring people that care about things and you just are doing a little bit more due diligence up front to validate whether or not somebody is a good fit to go into the process. That's what my hope is.
What is absolutely agree 100%. And so one of our clients who's also a mentor in our program, Rebecca Hastings, she delivered a presentation at one of our conferences a couple of years ago. And the title was Visualizing Value to Differentiate Your Service. And it was basically about how she went from contingent to retained. And one of the keys was, instead of just talking to the client and telling them what she was going to do for them, she actually showed them. And one of the keys was a video interview. So she created a landing page. It wasn't a login scenario like you're describing, where there's like a platform. But essentially, she was creating a landing page specifically for that client and that search, which was branded, had their logo. It had a video interview of her interviewing the senior hiring manager, asking those questions that you're describing, like, you know, what's great about the opportunity? Why did you start the business? What's the mission, the vision, the values? Like, what are the reasons why someone might want to be part of this thing? And, but then on the pitch to new customers, she's able to show them, here's what we're doing to make sure that we're attracting the best people. We're not just sending out in-mails and job descriptions, which is what everyone else is doing. And by allowing the client to visualize what the solution involved, they're like, sign me up. Like, her pitch to win rate is very, very high as a result of being able to show them. And I feel like you've taken that even one step further with the platform that you've built. So
what industry is she in?
She recruits in, these days it's AI, leaders in AI roles, but it's always been in tech.
That's the first time I've heard of somebody else doing a video interview with the hiring manager. So it's so powerful and impactful. And the first accepted offer we had through the platform, the director, first time I got to work with him, the candidate had the skill, had the experience, but they were in a different functional position, more of a cross-functional role. And so the candidate was super impressed with the video, the process. We bring it back to the hiring manager. And 2 days later, he calls me and says, this is really cool. I said, okay, tell me, why do you say that? And I didn't know him previously. He says, well, I got this resume. I looked at the resume and I thought, why did Darwin send me this guy? Why did he send me this candidate? And I was like, I wondered if how this would. He said, but then I watched the video and I went and looked at the questionnaire, the writing sample from the candidate and all the data. And I was like, holy cow, I absolutely should interview this candidate. And HR would have never even sent him the resume. He was like, they would have never made it past HR. And a week and a half later, the candidate accepted an offer, has been there 2 months, is doing really well. So that was our first one. We just got a second accepted offer through there. So I love what she's doing. And what my hope is, I'm throwing this out here. If you do retain search, let's talk. I showed this to one of my buddies who does retain search, and he says, well, this seems like more work to me. I don't have to do like an interview and this and that. I just do this. I was like, okay, well, that's fine. And I love this. We're really, really close friends. You probably know him.
It's not and Rich Rosen said, by any chance?
No, I love Rich. Okay.
It sounds like something Rich would say, like, hey, that looks great, Darwin, but
I'm not
going to
call my buddy out because I.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
But he was
I'm
like,
teasing
I don't.
Rich, he's going to listen to this and he'll agree, by the way, that he's like, doesn't want extra work. But I'm a believer in what you're doing, Darwin. My question is, how are you commercializing this? Like, do you sell it to the client? Do they get it as part of the retained package? How does it actually work?
So, as a part of the retain process for us, they get this process to like this. This is a part. And I showed this to a VP of HR in October who was like, we just paid a $97,000 fee to a recruitment firm for an executive role. We got resumes, a synopsis, and they did the scheduling. And like they were nice and did a good job, but we didn't get anything like this. And so my hope is this becomes the industry standard. Why would you not have at least, why would you not do all of this for such a vital, important position? I showed this to Watts, a couple of the higher level stakeholders for the Cleveland Clinic. They have 28 companies, medical device companies under their umbrella for financial development investment. And they said the biggest challenge we have is when we get one of the leadership roles wrong and we have to unwind that, how much money it costs, the pain of it. So my hope is at the very least, it becomes sort of the industry standard. And my friend who said, well, this seems like more work for me. And this, I love him and he gets $70,000 to over $100,000 fees. And I'm like, so you're sending resume and this and that. And I said, well, that's cool. And I don't blame you. But my hope is a year and a half from now, that you go to get a new client and the client says, well, what's your process? And they're using Top Talent Accelerate. They've got a recruiter that uses it and says, well, why would we use you when we're getting all of this depth of information so that we avoid the mishire and we get it right the first time? That's what my hope is. So I'm using it for my clients and then we'll bring the SaaS to the market where whether it's a company, an external recruitment firm or an internal, they're paying a monthly subscription fee to use the platform. And then, you know, and one of my value propositions to the startups I work with is, hey, you're going to use me and we'll use this process to make sure that we, you know, the team fits better. You waste less time and resources on interviewing people. We go find and then you know, we bring on the right person. And then if you want, we get to a certain point as you're growing and you get funding that then we could turn around and help you hire your internal HR or recruiter and help them use the system. Then you pay a monthly licensing fee to use it for your entire company for all your positions. And there's reporting mechanisms on time to hire, cost to hire, how many candidates were interviewed, how long does it take to get the feedback right? So you could actually measure departments against departments. Why is this department not having, why are people leaving too soon? Or why did we miss out on, you know, we had two people that didn't make it 6 months in sales. Like, how did we miss
that
here?
That is brilliant. Yeah, I love what you're doing, Darwin. So how should people reach out to you?
You can reach out to me at darwins@toptalentaccelerant.com. You can reach out to me through LinkedIn, through the website. And, you know, we're kind of the next stage. We've been piloting it. We tested it in December, November, December, and then we piloted it with two clients and learned and made new adjustments. And now we're kind of the next place where we're going to have a couple of recruitment firms play with it and have fun with it. And then the goal would be to kind of do a limited commercial launch to try to bring on some companies. I've got a couple of hospitals that are interested in taking a look at it. So that's kind of where we're at. So.
All right. And we'll put the link in the show notes on the website as well. So recruitmentcoach.com/podcast. We'll have this interview with Darwin, and then all the links will be there as well. So Darwin, as always, we have more that we could talk about. You've written a book since we last spoke. We didn't even get a chance to. So we'll include a link to your book as well. But I think it's on Amazon as well, right? Modern Day Job.
It is Modern Day Job. So it came out last April and has been a bestseller on Amazon. And
that's awesome, man.
Because of that book, I was asked to be in a Forbes book compilation for that's a really unique compilation of people's stories of overcoming challenges. And I'm right now in process of writing a book on talent management strategies that ties into the SaaS and around attraction, efficiency, and retention. So hopefully that book will be done here in the next few months.
Fantastic. Well, listen, pleasure catching up with you, and thanks for sharing your story and being so, because I feel like the last time you were on a high, and then so much has happened since then. I really appreciate you coming back and sharing the next chapter.
It's my pleasure. It's always, every time I get to interact with you, my day is better. And, I love your story and what you're doing. And I'm grateful to have the opportunity to come back on, and hope that this brings value.
It did indeed. So thanks, Darwin. I'll look forward to seeing you soon. Take care. Okay, before you go, here are two specific things from Darwin that you can start using immediately. They both involve video. So firstly, on the candidate side, are you using video to record either all of your candidate interviews or even snippets that you could then share with the client? One I love that Darwin uses is asking the candidate about their personal why, okay? So what he wants to do is, if the candidate's answer does not genuinely connect to what the company is building, then that reveals that there's not a great fit here, and it's going to break down once things get hard. So knowing that up front saves everyone time and protects your reputation. So it's the candidate why. Even with or without the video, are you asking about the candidate's why? I think that was a cool insight. Okay, secondly, instead of sending a job description to the candidates who are interested, send them a short recorded video of you interviewing the hiring manager. So you're going to cover their leadership style, what they actually need the person to do, and why a top candidate should choose their company over every other option on the table. Using this exact process, Darwin has been able to place candidates in 72 hours, which is almost unheard of. So if you apply both of these ideas consistently, you'll spend less time chasing people and more time closing. To connect with Darwin, you can reach him at darwin@toptalentaccelerant.com or find him on LinkedIn. And as always, the links are waiting for you in the show notes at recruitmentcoach.com/podcast. Growing your recruitment business shouldn't mean working longer hours. The truth is, if you're stuck, it's not because you need to work harder. It's because something in your business isn't working efficiently. The 7-Figure Freedom Scorecard is a free 10-minute assessment that gives you instant clarity on what's working in your business, what's slowing you down, and the next steps to build a 7-figure recruitment firm without the stress. Your personalized report will break down the 6 key areas of growth and show you exactly where you need to focus to increase revenue while working smarter and not harder. Get your custom score now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.